So I don't know what you're all expecting tonight. I gave a presentation a couple of weeks ago. It was a stewardship talk, and some of the Colwich folks were there, and so they asked me to basically give the same talk I gave back then. The new stewardship. I can get you to pass these around. The new stewardship theme this year is my faith responds. When you think about stewardship, typically stewardship is a grateful response, but this year it's my faith response. And they spent the whole time talking about the picture. I don't know, many of you recognize the picture? Do you recognize the priest there? Father Ben Green from Hutchinson. They asked him to, he has kind of a Jesus look, you know, he used to work at St. Francis Hospital. It was always pretty interesting when he would walk into a room because he looked so much like Jesus, and people thought, oh my goodness, you know, I'm sicker than I thought I was. But they spent the whole time talking about the picture. So what I told them is I wanted to talk about the words, which are my faith response, which is not always the same as our first response. All of us who have been involved in stewardship, we know what it is. We invite people during October to think about their gifts of time and talent and treasure. And they make a response. They say they'll do this. A lot of times people, we all have parishioners. I'm sure Father Pat does. We have parishioners that say, yeah, sign me up to bring up the offertory gifts, I'll give $10 a month. And it's a response. You know, it's a grateful response, but it's not necessarily a faith response. And so what we're going to try to do at St. Catherine, what we're going to try to do across the diocese is to get people to think not just about a response, but a faith response. So you say, what is my faith? So you look at how we, you know, this is my time, this is my talent, this is my treasure, and then say, this is my faith, and I want to respond based on faith. And like I said, sometimes our first response is not really a faith response, and I talked about when Bishop Jacobs asked me to start St. Catherine. One of the great sadnesses of my starting that new parish of St. Catherine, one of my great sadnesses is when the bishop first asked me to do it, I said no. He pulled me aside after a funeral. We had done a funeral. There were a bunch of priests. It was a parent of a priest, and everybody went to the cemetery, and he takes me by the arm, and he said, I need to talk to you. And he pulls me aside, and he said that he wanted me to start this new parish of St. Catherine, and he wanted to talk to me about it, and after he talked, he said, this is what he wanted to do. I said no. I said no for a couple of reasons. I said no because, number one, because I was happy where I was. I was at St. Thomas, and I was very happy, and the two pastors before me had been there for 20 years, and I'd been there 9 years, so I thought I had another 10 years. I was happy where I was. Second, I knew nothing about starting a church. How do you start a parish from scratch? How do you go to an empty field, a patch full of weeds? How do you do that? I thought, I don't know anything about starting a parish. And the third reason is I told the minister, I said, those are my people. I'm from Colwich, and you're asking me to go out there and start this parish. They say 40% of West Wichita is Catholic. So Wichita is 25% Catholic, but West Wichita is 40% Catholic because of St. Mark's and Ann down in Colwich, because of that influence. And so Northwest Wichita, you know, is 40% Catholic. And I told the bishop, I said, you know, these people, they saw me grow up. So, you know, they saw me on church on Sunday, but they also saw me at the keg on Saturday night. you know, not that I spent that much time in here, because, you know, we were all underage. Most of it happened out in the parking lot. You know, every Saturday night that we were out in the parking lot, and, you know, I have lots of stories about the parking lot of the K. Way before you took Coper, right? So I thought, you know, these are the people that I grew up with, and so I said, they're not going to listen to me. They won't listen to me because they know me. So I told the bishop, I said, now I think you should find somebody else. And he said, well, why don't you go pray about it for a week, and then come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. And after a week, and after a prayer, I made a faith response, which is not the same as a first response. I thought, you know, if the bishop thinks that this is what I should do, then maybe I should give it a try. So I met with him, and we had a conversation, and I made a faith response, and so he sent me out here. I left St. Thomas on Father's Day 15 years ago. I had nothing. You know, the only thing Bishop Jacobs gave me was a name and a zip code. He loved the name St. Catherine. I did his doctoral dissertation on St. Catherine. He gave me a name, and he gave me a zip code, 67205. I said, well, you know, how about a little cash? It's just a big weed patch. But he said, you know, if you don't know how to raise money, then maybe I picked the wrong person. So I thought, well, I had no cash, so I thought, well, I have to have a place to live. So I found a motel out on I-35 called the Reg Coach Inn. It's now a high school or something. But we used to, my buddies, I knew the Red Coach Inn because we used to go swimming there. They had a pool. They had one of these courtyard things, and we, you know, how are they going to know that we weren't staying there? We would just walk in with towels, and we used to go swimming there. And I thought, well, I have to have a place to live. So I found a room at that Red Coach Inn, and I moved in room 102. I picked it because each room had two beds. I could sleep in one bed and use the other bed for my office, and had free internet, included one meal. So I would eat one meal, and I would keep a little food for the rest of the day. And I just put an ad in the newspaper. I said, if any of you live in this area, if you live in Northwest Wichita, and if you'll open your home to me, I'll come and say mass. So for 3 months, 15 years ago, I would go from home to home, and I said mass in people's patios. I said mass in people's living rooms and their basements. I just said, if you live in this area, you know, open your home to me. If you invite some of your neighbors, I'll talk to them about maybe starting something from scratch. And so after 3 months, I met about 500 people. And we found a little metal building. It was a shirt factory, and the company had gone out of business. They did embroidery on shirts. So I went in there, and I thought, well, this will be a good place to start. And so we moved all the sewing machines aside. We put an altar up. We started saying masses. And we started with 111 families, and now we're 1,700 families, all because they made a faith response, which is not the same as a first response. All of this, as I was telling the folks about starting this, comes from my book. I have a book that I've never published, but a book that I've written is called There's a 8 Days Long is the name of my book. Everybody is 8 days, and taken from the scripture. You know, God created the world in 7 days, and everybody gets 8 days. And, you know, we have to try to figure out which day we're on. You know, God created the world in 7 days. 8th day is the day of resurrection. All of us get 8 days. So I looked at my life, and, you know, the first day, the The first day of my life was growing up in Coleridge, Kansas. My family, my brother Greg. Greg is the oldest. We grew up on a farm. We grew up on a pig farm, a mile west and a mile north of here. I loved growing up in Coleridge. Don May was my eighth grade teacher. Had a great education here. We loved I loved everything about growing up in Coleridge. That was the first day. We loved hunting and fishing. There's nothing like growing up in a town like this, and it was a big part of my life. The second day was my education. And each of you have to think about your own, what day you're on. The second was a time of education. I left home when I was 14. So I graduated from Coleridge Grade School, turned 14 in February, and I left home in June, and came back when I was 26. So I was 14 years old. Did I know at age 14 that I wanted to be a priest? Answer, no. I mean, how do you know at age 14 that you want to be a priest? When you grow up in Coleridge, Kansas, you're surrounded by priests. I mean, everybody thinks about maybe being a priest. The church is in the center of the town. Everything is around it. So we're all thinking about being priests, just like you think you want to be an astronaut or a policeman or a fireman, like any little boy wants to, thinks about growing up. So did I know that when I was 14 years old that I wanted to be a priest? No. But one thing I did know is I didn't want to be a pig farmer. I knew that. I loved farming, but I was kind of done with hogs. So the Precious Blood sisters that taught in the school here, and those of you who grew up here, I know that the Precious Blood sisters, they worked in these towns. We had Sister Mary Colburn and Sister Josetta. We had these great Precious Blood sisters. And they, the diocese, when I was thinking about being a priest, the diocese was not doing any vocation work because they had so many priests. And so they didn't even send anybody out there. They actually, the Precious Blood priest from Newman University, they said, hey, you know, if you're not going to ask anybody to be a priest, can we do it? So these Precious Blood priests would come around. And so at age 14, they invited me to a weekend experience up in Kansas City, and I went and had a good time, and ended up going to the seminary when I was 14. At the end of my 4 years at Precious Blood Seminary in Kansas City, luckily they don't have high school seminaries anymore. Now they say you should finish high school at home, and then if you still think that God is calling you to be a priest, then you can come in and talk and go into college. So they don't have any high school seminaries anymore, which is a good thing. I think kids should stay home and finish high school at home. But I don't regret it because I had a world-class education. I was in a seminary with 50 young men, 300 miles away from my parents. All of my teachers were priests, so every teacher I had in high school had a master's degree, which very few people can say that. I started with 35 in my class, and when I finished as a senior in high school, there were only five. So our classes were one priest, one teacher, and five students. So you sit at a round table like this, and you know, there's no going to sleep, there's no shooting spit wads, there's none of the stuff that you do in high school. You just a priest sitting at a table with five students saying, let's talk about the causes for the Second World War. And so I had a great education. At the end of high school, I went to college at Rockhurst in Kansas City. That's where we had the program. I was 4 years at Rockhurst in Kansas City. And then at the end of my 8 years, I decided that even though I felt like God was calling me to be a priest, if I would have been a Precious Blood priest, I never would have been stationed in Kansas. And just like I would never be stationed in Coleridge, I would never be stationed in my home state. And at that time, Greg was married, and he was starting to have children, and I thought, you know what? I don't want this. And so I went and talked to Mr. Maloney, he accepted me, and I joined the Diocese of Wichita. So I left the Precious Blood, and he sent me to Maryland, which was a great experience. Father York and I both went to Mount St. Mary's in Maryland, which is a great, you know, if you're going to spend the rest of your life in Kansas, it's a great opportunity to see the church where it began in the U.S., in Maryland. I mean, that's where Catholics joined. It was the Catholic colony. And so we got to go to school there. I had a great 4 years of education there. Every year at the end of the year, there's in Baltimore, there's a church called the Chapel Bessay, which in the basement, it means a chapel, a basement chapel. And in the basement of this chapel, there's an X on the floor, and a little plaque that says, at this spot in 1809, Mother Elizabeth Seton knelt down and made her profession to God to be a sister to Bishop John Carroll, who was the first bishop in the United States. And it's not roped off. And so every year for 4 years, I knelt on that same spot and said, God, is this something, is this what you want me to do? It's not just a response, but a faith response. Is this how you want me to spend my life? So every year, at the end of the year, I would kneel on that spot and say, please God, tell me what to do. So he kept, I never lost the desire, never lost the feeling that God really wanted me to do this. So I, at the end of those 4 years, I was ordained a priest. So that was the second day. First day was growing up in Colwitz, second day education, high school, college, graduate school. My third day was at the Cape and Mount Carmel. So when a lot of times when you grow up on the east side, you serve on the west, or when you grow up on the west side, you serve on the east. So they, having grown up on the west side, and they sent me to the east side. So I went to Cape and Mount Carmel and taught there for 7 years. It was a great experience teaching high school, because it teaches you to organize your thoughts. I mean, when you have to give a talk to high school kids, I mean, you have to be prepared. You have to have your thoughts ready. From the rest of my life, after 7 years teaching high school, when somebody comes up to me and say, will you give us a 20-minute talk on Mary, or a 20-minute talk on whatever, it's like, yes, I can do that. Because I was giving 50-minute talks to high school kids for 7 years. While I was teaching, I got to be in three great parishes and had three great mentors. I was at the Church of the Magdalene with Father Bill Reagan, Monsignor Reagan, who was a great administrator. He could sit at his desk longer than anybody I've ever met. He could just sit at his desk and pore over numbers and budgets. He was a great administrator. Then I went to the cathedral where I met Monsignor John Gilsonen. Some of you may know Johnny Gilsonen, who is the greatest shepherd that you could ever know. He was a great mentor to me. When I went to cathedral, he was 56 years old. I was 28. Now I'm 65, and he's been in heaven for 5 years. So it was a great time. He started coming out to our farm. It was every Easter, every Christmas, every birthday. We became great friends. He was a great mentor to me. And then finally, I was sent to Blessed Sacrament under Monsignor Ivan Eck, who in my opinion, is the best priest I have ever known in my life. You know, Father Monsignor Ivan Eck, who is now 96 years old, lives out of Chino Lake. He was at Blessed Sacrament, and he was the best of everything. You know, he was smart, and he was funny, and he was a great administrator, and he was great with kids, he was great with adults, he is great with adults. So that was the third day. My time at Capeman, and in those parishes. The fourth day, after 7 years, I got my own place at St. Peter Schulte. I got to build my first church out at St. Peter Schulte. I got to be a father, which is what every man wants to be. Every man wants to be a father. And Father Pat and I, that's the greatest thing about priesthood, is that's all we want to be as a father. I mean, what do fathers do? They take care of their kids, they cry with them when they're sad, and they celebrate with them when something's good is going on, and they pay the bills, and make sure that the roof is not leaking. You know, that's all we want to be as pastors. I learned early on in my priesthood that people want to be loved more than served. And so I went out there. I was 33 years old. I remember going out there. I was 33 years old, and they said, "Now, Father, isn't that the year Jesus was crucified?" that was the year that Jesus was crucified. But I went out there and got to be a father for the first time. I went out there. There were 89 kids in the school. They used to dismiss the... Does anybody grow up in St. Peter Schulte? They used to dismiss the kids by their cars. So when at the end of the school, instead of ringing the bell, the eighth graders, they knew all the cars. So an eighth grader would stand out on the street and say, "Smith family," and all the little Smiths would run out. "Jones family," and all the little Joneses would run out. There were 89 kids there. It was a great experience. That was the fourth day, my first pastorate. Then I went to the east side, bounced back and forth, having trouble holding a job, and went to the east side, St. Thomas, which was a huge, huge parish. And my first experience with just a huge parish. You know, we had 800 kids in the school when I went out there. It was just amazing. When I would say Mass, and the kids would come up for communion, I'm like, "I know you've been up here before. This is your second one, isn't it?" They go, "No, Father, it's my first." Because they just kept coming, just coming and coming. You know, 800 kids with over 100 employees. When I went to St. Thomas, our weekly budget was $90,000. Every Sunday, we had to take in $90,000 just to pay the bills. Every morning, you wake up and you say, "Okay, where are we going to get 10 grand today? Where are we going to get $10,000 to pay the bills today?" So I was there. That was the fifth day, and then Bishop Jacobs asked me to come out here to start St. Catherine. This is the sixth day, and that's the day where I knew that I had my best work. If you read the scripture in Genesis, it was on the sixth day that God did His best work. On the sixth day is the day that God created all the living things, all the living creatures. On the first day, He created the light. On the second day, this third day, that fourth day, that. But on the sixth day is when He created living creatures and He created us. And it's at the end of the sixth day that He said, "This is very good." Every day, this is good, this is good, this is good. On the sixth day, He said, "This is very good." So on the sixth day is when I have come out here and have had 15 years of working at St. Catherine. I continue to believe that as I tell people, if people, I don't know if you've ever, many of you have seen St. Catherine or if you've ever been to church there, but if you knew, if people knew how little I actually did, they would be shocked. You know, as Father Bjorn will tell you, you know, most of our work is just bringing people together. I have such profound respect for the laity. They're smart, and they're good, and they're holy, and they're generous, and they make these faith responses. All we have to do as fathers is just invite people to come and say, "Let's do something beautiful. Let's do something lasting. Let's do something beautiful for God." And so for the last 15 years, you know, I have just been amazed at people's goodness and generosity, and they're so smart, and all I did is just kind of brought them all together, and so now we have a place that I hope that people will be able to come. We wanted to, because of our location on the highway, all the people who drive into Wichita on K-96 will see the towers, hopefully. People who fly in on the airport will see the towers and know that Wichita is a Christian city. I wanted to do two towers. Why? Because I grew up in Coleridge. Randall has one tower. St. Mark's has one tower. Coleridge has two towers. So I've always wanted to do two towers. The whole purpose of a bell tower is to call people to prayer, and prayer is conversation. Prayer is conversation. God speaks and we respond, or we speak and God responds, but it's conversation. It goes back and forth. And that's why, you know, the bell tower, the bells call people to prayer. And so that's why it's great to have two towers, whether you're in Coleridge or St. Catherine's, because it's conversation. It's not just us talking, it's not just God talking, but it's us talking to each other. We have five bells at St. Catherine. Each of the bells has a name. The donor gets to name the bell, just like just like you get to name your children. When a bell is blessed, it's almost like a baptism. The rite, it's almost like the rite of baptism. It's anointed with oil. It's sprinkled with water. It's named. I'm very proud. I didn't know this, but my grandfather, my dad's dad, Ben, was a sponsor for one of the bells here at St. Sacred Heart. If you look at the history of Sacred Heart Parish, each of the bells has a donor and they have a sponsor. One of the bells, the donor wanted to remain anonymous, and was it Ben or Adam? Ben would have been too young, so it's Adam would have been the sponsor for one of the bells. So we have St. Catherine. We have five bells. The first is Michael, the donor. He named the bell Michael in honor of his father. Said, my dad did so much for me, and I don't know that I've ever had a way of honoring him. So he named the bell Michael after his dad. The second bell is Mary. The donors had a great love for Mary, so they named the bell Mary because they believed that she had watched over their family as a mother. The third bell is Clara. Clara is 500, so 2,000 pounds. Michael is 2,000. Mary is 1,000 pounds. Clara is 500 pounds. It was the donor. They named the bell Clara because their first grandbaby was stillborn, and they never got to hear her voice. So they named the bell Clara. And so when Clara rings, she rings for all the children who died by abortion or miscarriage. And mothers, you watch them. When they hear Clara, you look and the tears stream down their eyes because they hear the voice of these children. So Clara she's 500 pounds. Jonathan is 250. Jonathan was donated by a family. Their sixth grade boy died of cancer as a sixth grader. And they bought it for all the children who have serious illness. So every time Jonathan rings, they think of Jonathan. And finally, the last little bell is Lucy. She's 100 pounds. the family, they have a grandbaby who's blind, and Lucy is the patron saint of blind. So she prays for all those who have disabilities, all those who suffer. So when these bells are ringing, it's not just bells ringing saying, Mass is about to start, find your place, you're almost late. But it's conversation. And so it rings for the conversation. So that's why we have the two towers, but mainly because of how I spent my first day. So the sixth day was the time that I have spent, and I have every intention of continuing on at St. Catherine. My last hope is to have a convent, just because I grew up here in Sacred Heart, and I owe my vocation not just to the good people of Sacred Heart, but also to the good sisters who taught me. Sister Mary Colburn, anybody, Dawn, you remember Sister Mary Colburn? If anybody ever thought that I gave a good homily, it's because of Sister Mary Colburn. She's the one who taught me to think creatively and to write creatively. And to John Rastica. John Rastica was a great preacher. Those of you who were here, sometimes he could really get after it, but he was a great preacher. And so John Rastica, I grew up with him, and Sister Mary Colburn taught me to write. So it's always been my hope to be able to build a convent. I would love the final. We have a rectory now. We have a school, 500 kids in our school. We have 500 kids in our school. We have 300 kids in our PSR program, if you can imagine. So a lot of kids go to like the Mays schools. So we have 500 kids in the Catholic school and 300 kids in Mays, and we have 200 kids at Bishop Carroll. So a lot of kids are receiving Catholic education every day. But it's my hope that someday, like I grew up in Colwich where we had sisters, I would hope that we could have a convent for sisters who come and live. So that's the sixth day, my work at St. Catherine. So the seventh day, what's the seventh day? The seventh, if I have one more parish in me, so I'm 65, we can retire at 70. So if the bishop, he can let me finish at St. Catherine, or if he finds another little place in the country, I have no desire to go out to the old priest home. So when my work is done at St. Catherine, then I have that seventh day, which it says that at the seventh day God rested, which does not mean he slept. What is the seventh day is the day of rest, where the Latin is restare, which means to stand back, where you just stand back and take it all in, where you reflect on the goodness that God has done and the work that you've been able to accomplish. So the seventh day is the day of restare, standing back, and then the eighth day is heaven, so whenever that comes. But it's all about a faith response. You know, it's not necessarily the first response. So when I think, you know, that 15 years ago, I can't take it back. It's one of my great regret is that my faith wasn't strong enough. I thought, I cannot do this, and I don't want to do this. I want to stay where I am, so I told him no. But a faith response came later, and I said yes, and now I have a great 15 years at St. Catherine. Look forward to finishing there. So that's my talk. That's the talk I gave a couple of weeks ago, and a little extra for my great love for Culver's. I have great memories. Most of it, like I said, was out in the parking lot. But I'm so proud of it. Question. This is a question here. Did you have questions?
Yes. Cheers.
We can go out in the parking lot.
What's that? We can go out in the parking lot.